Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Plodcast, presented by sportsshoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Every Sunday we get together with a guest from the distance running world,
giving you an insight into the lives and training of some of the UK's best athletes and coaches.
You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and all major podcast streaming services.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Plodcast, where we post about our past and present guests, host giveaways and much more.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome back, guys. This week we spoke to Adam Fogg, aka the Fogg Dog exclusive, NCAA All-American indoors last year, and a 337 1500 meter man. Recently signed a pro contract with Under Armour. Enjoy.
Thank you for tuning in once again, guys. Yes, as Lum says, Adam Fogg, and probably a name that you might not have heard of if you're not in social running circles or, you know, a big YouTube fan as well. So, but he's a brilliant guest, and he is, we can probably call him a YouTuber as well. He's a running YouTuber. He's a professional athlete now, signed with the Baltimore Group as well. And he did that off the back of the NCAAs, where he studied out in Drake, which is very good. And he should be taken seriously. He's a 337, 1500 meter man, and that's this year as well. So it is recent. He's in great form as well. And now moving over to Baltimore, signing with Under Armour, what can he do in the next few years? He's a British citizen now as well, but he grew up in Australia. So he talks a lot about his upbringing in Australia, why so many Australians choose to go to the NCAA as a career move. And he is someone as well who was quite a late developer in our sport, even to the point where he was almost stuck in Australia because he couldn't get that move to the NCAA because he wasn't quite good enough. He then finally got that move to Drake and quickly kind of got down to the low 340s and then now a 337 guy as well. So I think we're going to see a lot more of him, especially domestically and across the pond as well. But yeah, it's a really good guess, and we do talk about a lot of the marketing and the branding of our sport as well. So look, take care, enjoy this one, and we'll catch you next week.
Right, Fogg Dog, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on, mate.
Thanks for having me, boys. Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah. Look, we'll start kind of with the main stuff, really. Like, you just finished up your collegiate career recently, signed with Under Armour. Congrats. Just talk us through the move, how it feels, and how it all came about.
Yeah. So it's been a pretty exciting few months. My kind of college career ended a little bit more quickly than I thought it would. I always planned on finishing this year at Drake and then being done with college. I could have gone back technically, but I graduated, got my degree, and was like ready to get out of there and kind of move on, I think. But I had my appendix out in May, which kind of cut my NCAA season a little bit short. And then yeah, signed with Under Armour in June. I've joined the new group out in Baltimore, Mission Run Baltimore Distance. Out here now, been back a week and a half now. So all going well. And it kind of came about, like, I was chatting to Corey Leslie, who's now my coach. He messaged my coach at Drake back in like December, January. And we kind of started talking a bit about kind of what Under Armour had in the pipeline for starting up a group. And yeah, in the end, it just seemed like it was going to be a really great fit. Signed, spent a couple months out in Europe doing a bit of my own thing, training with a few guys I know out of Australia. Got a few races under my belt, got back into decent shape, and now back in America. I had a race last week and I've got one more a week today. One final race to kind of polish off the season, I guess. Yeah,
man. You said it started back in December, January time, which seems like ages ago. Because, you know, my question was going to be when you kind of finished up, like you say, you didn't quite get the roll of the dice coming, you know, having like one last hurrah at the NCAAs, for example. Yeah. So it's going to be, you know, were you doubtful of what you were going to be doing? Did you want to still be running and stuff? Like, where was your head at that point? And I know talks on the Armour is in December, January, but, you know, when did they fully evolve then?
Yeah. So the good thing I always kind of knew I had in the back of my head was from the start with talking to Corey Leslie, who is the coach of this Under Armour group. He kind of said to me basically pretty early on in our conversations that he'd almost like seen enough and he was pretty keen to have me signed. Which, based on how things worked out, I was pretty lucky. Because I ended up, I ran all right indoor. Ran okay early on in outdoor, and then had my appendix out and didn't run again for Drake. So yeah, I always kind of knew that the Under Armour thing was going to be an option, but it was definitely a little bit worrying, kind of not finishing off my season the way I wanted to. I did chat to a few groups, and they kind of, I don't know, they just didn't seem like they were going to be as good of a fit as this Under Armour group. And yeah, I just really liked kind of the sound of being out in Baltimore. The Under Armour World headquarters is out here. So that's kind of where we're based. And yeah, basically, I guess to answer your question, yeah, we were chatting from kind of January and went through the season and yeah, kept talking and ended up signing straight out of college pretty much. So all worked out in the end. But yeah, a little bit worrying throughout.
Yeah, definitely.
No, it's interesting, man, because I feel like a lot of, especially historically, a lot of people, they'll hit NCAA track and then it's almost the week afterwards they're scrambling around for agents, scrambling around for groups and stuff. Did you get an agent in place
Yeah.
before, like to sort out a contract and stuff?
Yeah, so I chatted to a couple of different ones. So in the end I ended up signing with James Templeton, who's based in Australia. And he's got a pretty small group of athletes that he manages. And I really kind of we'd been talking for quite a long time. So we started talking probably early 2021, I think around the time I came fourth in the mile indoor in America. And we were talking then for the next kind of year and a half while I was still in college, kind of planning out hopefully what I was going to be doing after college. So yeah, I ended up going with him. And he's good because he's got a small group mostly of Australian-based athletes. But over the summer they get over to Europe and they've got a base in Germany, where they train out of. So the guys I was at altitude with in Italy, they're from Australia. They're all managed by James Templeton as well. So it worked out pretty well for that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. Look, we should backtrack a little bit and introduce you just a little bit more because, if people, I mean, everyone's on YouTube these days, they would have heard of the Fog Dog, but for people who aren't, and kind of know your story a little bit, let's talk about it because, you grew up in Australia and then kind of ended up at Drake University. Talk about, transitioning to an American uni, being Australian, and obviously your kind of upbringing as well in the sport.
Yeah, it's kind of now like every man and their dog go over to college from Australia. Like
Right.
it's such a popular thing to do. So for me, I always loved the idea of going over to college. Straight out of high school, I wanted to go, but I hadn't quite run quick enough, I don't think. So I started university in Australia. I ended up doing a couple of years there, but I didn't like the degree I was doing. Training was going all right, but I was ready to make a bit of a change. And start of 2019, I was running a little bit quicker, and got a couple of messages from not many, but a few different unis in America. And it kind of came at the perfect time because I was about to swap universities in Australia. And then my Drake coach Jay Colosseus messaged me just on Instagram. We got talking, and within about a week, I went from kind of giving up on the idea of going to college to basically committing to going to Drake. And then yeah, I went over August 2019. Obviously Corona then happened, and I was back in Australia for pretty much all of 2020. But it was a pretty smooth transition. The biggest change for me was in Australia. I was super low mileage. That's kind of how most of the groups out there are, other than like Melbourne Track Club. So a lot of the groups that have the young kind of runners coming through a super low mileage, just pretty much three speed sessions a week, and not very much easy running on the side. And then going over to America, it was kind of like thrown straight in the deep end. The mileage was pretty high straight away. But the coaches were really good with it. And they were smart and made sure that I wasn't gonna, be overdoing it. And yeah, didn't get injured. Just lots of longer sessions and higher mileage. That was the biggest kind of adjustment, but it all worked pretty well. Yeah, and I'm pretty glad I did make that move and head over to college in the end.
Yeah, for sure, man. That's something I wanted to ask about, to be fair, because like having watched some of the YouTube, like you do like a lot of strength work, and obviously made a cross country NCAA as an individual, which is extremely hard to do, as people like fans of the NCAA will know. Like, what would you say your mileage was at in terms of like overall volume, and then like the sessions when you started at Drake, and versus kind of just finishing this cross country season?
So going over from Australia, I was running about 50 miles a week at most, so about 80K. And most of the sessions in Australia were pretty low volume, fast, kind of usually on the track. Sometimes we'd go and do a few hills or something like that, but generally pretty low volume. I'd be surprised if we ever went over about 5K, maybe 6K at most, so about 4 miles as a maximum. Then heading over to America, the mileage picked up pretty quickly to about 80, 85 miles a week, so around 130 kilometers every week. Sometimes a little bit higher as well, depending on kind of racing and stuff like that. And with sessions, they were pretty quickly up around the anywhere from 8 to 12K in volume, so about 5 to 8 miles. Some sessions, obviously, if we had a race coming up, they would drop down. Like, the coaches were really good with that and making sure we were fresh at the right times. But yeah, definitely an adjustment. And then over my time at Drake, it kind of steadily picked up a little bit more. So last summer, when I was kind of preparing to go back to America for cross country, I was up running, 100 miles a week for a couple of months there. And I ran a 5K on the roads in England, actually, podium 5K off pretty much pure base work. Like, I was doing a couple of workouts, but they were pretty big sessions. I wasn't doing too much at like 5K sort of race pace. And yeah, that strength work just really kind of paid dividends. And yeah, I was able to run a pretty solid 5K. So pretty high mileage. It got up to about 100 miles a week last summer. Stayed pretty high through the cross country season, and then come indoor and then outdoor, dropped down a bit.
I want to know, you mentioned in Australia, every man his dog sort of wants to go to an American uni. American uni is obviously popular in the UK, but I feel like we do probably have a setup which is almost as equally as good now. Given, yeah, you're not getting your university education free, but training wise, so is it just a case of in Australia, like you said, the training groups maybe aren't quite as good, or even the races, because obviously you guys must have fairly diluted fields at that, like, going through the age groups.
Yeah, I think definitely in Australia, yeah, there are a few decent groups for youngsters kind of coming through, but then once you're in university, like, the numbers really kind of drop off pretty noticeably. I think when people finish school and they're looking at going to uni, and some people are starting work, they really struggle in Australia to kind of keep it going after high school. And I've seen so many cases of like really good young runners who look like they're going to be running for years to come, start uni, or start work out of high school, and then they're not running within, like, I don't know, 6 months or a year. They start going out, getting in the party scene, and I don't know, there's just so many other things in life that kind of make it very easy to not stay in running. So I think the very appealing thing from Australia looking at going to college is like, you get a degree either fully paid for or very heavily subsidized. And as well, you just the competition basically is like so much stronger. And in Australia, if you're happy staying in Australia for the full kind of year, and doing the Australian season, then that's great. But with going to America, it kind of opens the door to, European seasons and stuff like that, where in Australia it can feel a little bit isolated if you don't have kind of the funding or the plan to kind of get over to Europe or America to do those races, if that makes sense. So yeah, I agree with you. I think England is definitely pretty good now with, the university systems. I know there's like, I don't know, Loughborough, Leeds, St. Mary's, like just to name a few, Birmingham, that have pretty good programs. But I think, yeah, for Australians, it's money probably plays a pretty heavy factor in going to America, and then just the training and the competition out there is, yeah, pretty good.
I guess it's hard to relate to professionals as well because you can't have too many professionals actually kicking about on Australia all the year. Like we know obviously the likes of McSwain, but we know he probably spends the best part of over 6 months abroad. So
Yeah.
you guys can't have too many people to kind of look up to, do you know what I mean, and see that pathway.
Yeah, for sure. And America, it's funny because like the Americans in college kind of they don't really realize that a lot of people are over at college, almost because they're trying to get a professional contract. And England, it kind of seems now like you can make it work from England. But in Australia, if you're not going to be with Melbourne Track Club, you pretty much can't be a professional runner. So again, the collegiate system really kind of opens the door to, yeah, I guess going pro. If you run well in college, it kind of, yeah, makes that a possibility for after, where in Australia it's just kind of, not so common out there.
Is that, let's talk about that. Is that quite interesting? Because we know obviously a lot of people turn professional after college, but is that quite weird to some obviously college students who are just there, they're just on the team, maybe at a university like Drake as well, where you'll have people on the team and they're not, it's not like a NAU where they literally are all, virtually professional. And you're there, you're training, you're aspiring to be a professional, you're aspiring to move on and continue in this sport, and obviously there are people who have different goals. So is that a hard dynamic to be in?
I guess it can be, but overall my experience at Drake was really good. It was a good mix of guys who were really there to try and be pushing for the next level, and also a few guys who were very happy to be running in college, because that's a huge thing in America. In high school, it's kind of like being recruited to go to college and then being recruited to go professional. Like from high school, you have to be running pretty well to go and run at college. Whether you're on a scholarship or not, you kind of have to be at a decent level. So yeah, I do think there's quite a few people in the NCAA who probably were super happy to kind of get to college and be running in college, and then they kind of make the most of their 4 years in college. They run and they train, and they enjoy themselves. And I guess it's kind of a good mix because you want to be able to experience college life, but at the same time, for people who are trying to make it to that next level, it's good to have a few of them around so that you can kind of get the work done. But a bit of fun on the side as well. Never hurt.
Yeah, sure. Look, during your time at Drake, you switched allegiance from Australia to Britain, I believe, in 2021. Talk to us about that and kind of how that decision came about and what influenced it.
Yeah, so I was born in England. Grew up, well, didn't really grow up there, but I lived there till I was seven. All my family and everything's from England. So we moved out to Australia. It was going to be for a couple of years originally, just the four of us, so me, my brother, mum and dad. And yeah, we were out there for, it ended up being 15 years. And last year, mum and dad moved back to England. And it kind of came at a pretty decent time, I guess, because I was trying to, straight after the collegiate season last year, I wanted to run at European under 23s. So a couple of months kind of before that, near the end of the collegiate season, I was kind of scrambling about trying to change my allegiance basically. And I spoke to a couple of coaches in England and got that done pretty smoothly. Mostly to try and use European under 23s as kind of a stepping stone to get an international vest, and then yeah, just kind of have the opportunity hopefully in future to run for Team GB at whatever it might be. That didn't end up working out. Like I came back from America, was pretty unwell for a week or two. And I was in quarantine when the under 23 trials were happening. So didn't end up running the trials, didn't qualify for the European under 23 team, but swapped my allegiance, and that's the way it is now. So in future, hopefully I'll get the chance to get a GB vest, whatever it might be at.
Yeah, definitely, man. I think I saw an interview of you on, I don't know what, after your race the other day. You're like talking about European indoors and things like that. Yeah, talk to me about that and your goals going forward with the pro group.
Yeah, so that was on Sidious Mag. I
Yeah.
hardly remember doing that, to be honest. I was
Bad way,
so,
weren't you?
oh, I was in a really bad way. It was, yeah, I don't usually get that after racing anymore, but in the past, I've had a few really bad ones, and yeah, it kind of came back and got me pretty good after that mile. But yeah, I think European indoors is something I've chatted to James Templeton, my manager, a little bit about, and Corey, and it seems like a realistic, kind of a realistic team. Obviously, it's going to be very hard. Like the UK is very strong, but it's kind of realistic in the sense of there's European indoors. There might actually be a world indoors again. I think there is, but I'm just kind of confused because of how much is going on. But then there's world outdoors next year, so it might possibly mean that a few people just decide to focus on, maybe just world outdoors, or they don't want to run European indoors. So not necessarily that I'm relying on that happening, but I think it would obviously make it a little bit more realistic and achievable. But yeah, qualifying for something like European indoors in either the 1500 or the 3K would just be a really good stepping stone for getting an international vest, and then for the future, having made a team, it would kind of just, yeah, I guess make it seem a little bit more realistic for future teams. Yeah.
Last something I wanted to touch on just a bit was, do you think you have a benefit of being in the NCAA, having done some kind of serious indoor seasons the past few years? Because I do always think that that's probably one of the main benefits for me, like looking at some of the guys who come and do our indoor trials and things, the people who've gone through the NCAA and done that serious championship indoor racing often fare better than maybe athletes who on paper might be kind of have better time and stuff, but haven't been through that kind of rigorous racing system.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think for sure racing in the NCAA, racing indoor helps. I've had a few rough ones. I've been tripped a couple of times, and I always kind of struggle indoor, I think, because I'm reasonably tall, and it's definitely tough on the indoor tracks, kind of just trying to find a good position and tuck in, and the tactics are so different. So for sure, yeah, running in the NCAA, having a few races indoor under my belt, definitely helps. If I was gonna, go over to the UK and run the trials, having never run indoor before, I think I'd probably struggle. My first ever mile, funnily enough, indoor. Yeah, I just got tripped so hard and didn't run very well. So I think having those kind of experiences under my belt, yeah, for sure would help.
No, and it's good to hear you are heading, wanting to go to European indoors and stuff, because I think those competitions are the reason why we have such depth in 1500. Because someone like yourself, it would be very hard for you to aim for example, if there was just the World Championships next year, like if you're American, for example, there's only the World Championships to aim for, and you just know it's like, well, what else is there for me that I can kind of get myself up for motivated aside from just trying to run a PB? So I think those competitions are huge stepping stones. And you're someone who has probably come under the radar in the UK, given you transferred just last year and stuff, but you have run 337. Talk to us about this season as well, because you made 48 to 337 in like 6 weeks.
I don't know how, to be honest. I wanted to retire after that race in Loughborough. I was ready to call it a season and a career. But so having my appendix out in May, I knew that my NCAA season was done. It was early May, and that was kind of right at the pointy end of qualifying for nationals and conference meets in America and stuff. So I knew that there was no chance of me coming back for the American season. But I always kind of planned on British champs being like my first proper one back. And I wanted to get a 1500 under my belt before British champs, basically. So about 5 or 6 weeks after having my appendix out, I thought I was in really pretty good shape again. Like, I think I said hopefully in the low 340s before that race in Loughborough. I was about 158, 159 through 800. And then, just blew up, closed in like 65, I think, and ran 348. I had so many people kind of flying past me in the last 150. But that was mid-June, 348. And then I raced British champs, came, I think, sixth in my heat in 350. It was a tactical one. So I kind of felt like that was a step in the right direction. I had a couple more weeks of training under my belt and ran 341 in Belgium, which was a huge step forward again. And then I went off to altitude in Livigno, Italy, with those guys out of Australia. So Jai Edwards, who's run 333, went to Tokyo. Rory Hunter, 336. And then Jai Perrott, who's a 145, 800 guy. So it was kind of like the best spot to be, like just really good training environment with three guys who have run pretty quick. Had a couple of weeks there, came down off the mountain and ran 337.96 in Germany. Then had another one in Luxembourg, 338.2. So it worked out pretty well. Given kind of mid-June, I was running 348 and really struggling. And I just kind of, the last few months getting into those races, I've just kind of kept my mileage pretty low and just been doing like some quicker sessions, just trying to not overdo it. Cause I kind of thought getting loads of mileage under my belt now isn't particularly worth it. Like, I'm trying to get in race shape, just get a few good speed sessions under the belt and get hopefully back in decent shape. And it kind of worked out probably as well as I could have hoped for it to.
Easily, man. That winter of 100 mile weeks clearly paying dividends now.
Exactly.
In the bank, isn't it?
No, for sure. I think that definitely helped last summer in England, out on the greenway, pounding along.
Actually, that's the point. You know, you mentioned the greenway, you mentioned England. You know, for quite a period of your life, and I think, you know, from following your YouTube channel, this was kind of evident, especially through COVID. You were kind of here, there, and everywhere. But how did you make that work? Because I know for a lot of people, being out of a routine, being out of like their training environment, their location, it kind of just all goes to pot. I mean, especially like, I'm the same, we're the same. Like, if I'm on the road, I'm not doing anything. So how did you manage to keep so disciplined and really, you know, still improve during that time?
Yeah, I don't even know, to be honest. Like, I guess from a pretty young age, I've been used to kind of moving around a little bit. I guess from when we were in Australia, that was kind of home base from when I was seven until I went to college. But going out to college was completely new. And I guess I just kind of had to make it work. I didn't find that first cross-country season super kind of easy and smooth as a transition, but it worked out pretty well. And then going back to Australia for Christmas and then back to America for the next kind of, for the indoor season, basically 2020, I kind of just knew I had to be able to be pretty flexible and just almost like make it work wherever I am. And then Corona happened and I was back in Australia, and that, even though obviously it's looked back on as a pretty bad year for most people in probably England and America. I think we had it pretty good in Australia. In Brisbane, life was pretty normal. We had a couple of like pretty strict lockdowns, but that kind of allowed me to get into a pretty good routine. I was up pretty early most mornings. I had to do some online classes and stuff, but that kind of year almost worked really well. And then going back to America, yeah, I don't know. I just got back into it and got back into the swing of things, just in a different place. But I guess kind of having a good team around you, and that's what we had in America, it makes it a lot easier for sure. Yeah, went through indoor outdoor 2021, and then by that time mum and dad had moved back to England. So instead of going back to Australia for my like summer, Northern Hemisphere summer, it would be Australian winter break, I was back to England. And then yeah, England's been home base since then. So I don't know, to be honest. I've just always been happy kind of floating about like wherever. And training's worked out all right, kind of in a number of different environments, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And even to the point where you've trained with a lot of different people as well, across the world. You've made a lot of friends and a lot of connections as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, America, Australia, and England, it's now like, yeah, no, people kind of all over the place. So it's good. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
That's
Like,
what it's all
chat
about.
about the chat about a YouTube channel now, but yeah, just on that, I think like from that, just seeing you working out with so many different groups and things, and it's great to see that at your level you're still able to do that, and just kind of hop in and out with different groups, and it seems to be working for you.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, touching on that, like when I was back in England last summer, and then over Christmas, and then this kind of summer while I was in England, like I'd just jump in with my cousin's group, Pierce Clisham. He just ran 152. They run for, so it's Pierce and Miles Clisham. They run for Coventry Godiva Harriers, and they've got a good group of guys. There's a guy called Linton who's run 151, I think, and then Jamie Natushka, he's run like 156. And it just works. Like, I mean, it's not like the top kind of group that I've trained with, but it's really good. We still share reps, and yeah, it's just worked really well. So yeah, no, it's been good.
Yeah, no, it's good to see, because I do think a lot of people, they like reach a level and then get stuck in their ways about where they can train and who
Yeah.
they can train with and that sort of thing. But like from like seeing some of your workouts, it doesn't seem like that at all. But look, let's chat about a YouTube. Like, where did the idea first come from? Because I guess apart from like the athlete special was probably the first, but after that is probably yourself in the NCAA scene.
Yeah, probably just about. I think there have been a few kind of little channels kind of popping up all over the place, and it seems like now more and more people are getting into it, which is kind of cool to see. But I was back in Australia end of 2019 after my first kind of cross country season in America, and I was doing a bit of running with, I don't know if you'll have heard of him, but Matt Hansen, who's from Australia. He's 17 and he's looking at going to college at the moment. But he was just on a run, and he was like, "Oh, you should start up the Fog Dog Special." Yeah, after the athlete special. And I was like, "Nah, I'll have a think about it, but more than likely I'm not gonna start a YouTube channel." Like I never really thought I'd, do that. But yeah, a couple of days went by, and I went to a shopping center, saw a camera. I was there with my friend Luke. I was like, why not? Bought a camera and just started it up, and thought I'll see how it goes. It's funny because I never actually planned on posting a video until I had about five or six videos like done and ready to go, so that I could then be like, kind of watch through them, be like, these are gonna do well or not. And if I didn't like them, I just would never have ended up posting them. But after I filmed my first one, I was like, oh, why not just post it and see what happens? And yeah, it took a while to get going. I still feel like it's kind of, I mean, the athlete special has like five times my subscribers, so it's still hopefully got a bit of growth in it. But Yeah, no, it took a while to get going, but it's been good fun. Yeah.
You felt it's one of those things, isn't it? Once you start, have you ever felt pressured to, continue? Has it been hard to continue to, keep coming up with original content? And then also, there'll be times in your career where you just don't feel like doing it as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. And for the first like year and a half, for the first 18 months, I posted a video every single Thursday night in American time. So when I was back in Australia for 2020, it was every Friday morning during Corona, the videos would come out, and I stuck to that schedule. And it kind of meant that I was like, some weeks not a lot would be going on, and I was just kind of scraping some stuff together and like putting out whatever I could. And as long as I would get a video out every week. But after the 2021 outdoor season in America, I kind of scrapped that idea, and I was like, I'm just going to start posting whenever I kind of want to. And now it kind of works really well, because I'll just post videos whenever I have them ready. I've actually got the video from Luxembourg 1500 that's nearly 4 weeks ago now, coming out today. I finally got around to editing that yesterday, and it's coming out this afternoon here, like tonight in England. But yeah, that's kind of what I've changed the channel into. It's kind of more, instead of rushing to get a video out every week where it might not be a great video, I'm kind of just like enjoying doing whatever I can for the channel, but making sure it's not kind of taking away from running. Like, I'm not gonna have the camera out in people's faces like right before races, and stuff like that, if it isn't kind of necessary, you know what I mean? So yeah, now it's kind of I just post whenever I can, and I still really enjoy it, and I'll keep it going, but probably just whenever I film a video, I'll get it out. If that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. And it did it ever get in the way of running? At any point, did it kind of ever, stop your training, stop you reaching a better race or whatever?
No, definitely not. And yeah, from the start, that was something I wanted to make sure I, was definite on. Like, it wasn't going to take away from running, and from any of my teammates running, or from anyone's running, obviously. So it's always kind of been like the lower priority. Like, running is the top one, and then the videos that come from it. But yeah, no, it definitely never did take away from it. It was a little bit like stressful sometimes, like trying to get a video out every week, but that's why I've kind of changed, just to whenever I have one done, I'll get it up, and yeah, it makes it a bit more stress-free.
Yeah, I mean, have you learned to be, because I've got like a theory that kind of, creating content like that teaches you to be a bit more honest with yourself about, how you're feeling, how things are actually going. I guess it's a little bit like keeping a training log, but if you don't do these things, it's quite easy to kind of, not be honest with your feelings and how things actually went. And obviously you can't really bluff a YouTube channel because there's an audience out there who will pull you up on it. So
Yeah.
did it change you as a person at all?
I don't think it's changed me too much as a person, but maybe I don't really know, to be honest. But I've always made sure I'm very, very honest on YouTube, and I'll show the highs and the lows. Like, I'll, if the race doesn't go how I want it to, I'm not gonna go out there and say, yeah, it was a great day, or kind of make too many excuses. Usually there's an excuse or two in the pipeline ready to go. But yeah, I've always been pretty honest with it and shown the good days and the bad days. Like, if I have a bad race, it's not like I'm gonna just not post it. I always will still make the video, and I'll just say, yeah, don't know what happened, wasn't my day. But yeah, no, I don't know if it's changed me too much as a person, but maybe, yeah.
Now, one thing I think is cool about yours is how like involved your coach is kind of in on some of the videos. Like, he seems so happy to like explain the session. I've even heard rumors that he's like said to recruits, "Oh, if you want to know what it's like a trade, just watch the Fog Dog."
Yeah,
So
for sure.
I just love it.
Where have you heard those rumors? Have you spoken to a few people?
Yeah,
Because
I'll tell you afterwards. I don't know if they want me saying, but yeah, I've heard that's what he does. But that's
nice. Yeah.
awesome, because I know Flowtrack used to have kind of the monopoly over what college stuff gets shared, and having
Yeah.
people like yourself go and do it is so helpful for these unis.
Yeah, definitely. Jay, my college coach, was always pretty good with being in YouTube videos, and it's pretty simple. Like what he would do is just kind of explain the session, and then maybe at the end kind of say how it went and what we've got coming up. And it's just like it kind of adds another dimension to it, because people who might not be in the NCAA kind of get to see what that athlete coach relationship is like. And I guess, yeah, with the videos, just see a little bit of what training is actually like out there. So definitely adds to it having the coach. And then on that note, having your teammates involved for sure helps. Like if it was, I would never want to make a channel where it's like purely all about me and I'm not going to talk about other people's running. And if I'm training, with my cousin's group, I love to get a little clip of them at the end, like talking about how the session went or what they've got coming up. And it really adds to it, I think. And lets viewers kind of follow along with other people as well. Yeah, it's good.
For sure. Like myself and Matt, we were a bit guilty of like moaning on this podcast sometimes about athletes not marketing themselves, and almost just accepting that there's not much, I guess, financially in the sport sometimes, but then at the same time, I think there is a responsibility on athletes to make sure they maximize what they do have. You're someone who's obviously, your way of doing that is YouTube. Like, do you think athletes should do more to market themselves?
Yeah, I definitely do think they should overall. I mean, it's just not that hard. I think there's so many people who are like, just they just don't want to get involved with any kind of social media or, well, that kind of thing. And I'm not saying you have to go out there and start a YouTube channel. Like that's quite an effort, and it, yeah. I mean, I never thought I would, but it's definitely not for everyone. But I don't know, even things like Strava, with people being really secretive, like some of the top guys, it's kind of, I guess it's fair enough, but it's just like there's so many different platforms now where you can build a bit of an audience, and brands love that. Like if you're gonna say you're finishing college and you've got 10,000 subscribers on YouTube, a Strava following, an Instagram following, like that's a brand would way rather have that if you're on a similar running ability level to someone else over someone who has never made an Instagram account. You know what I mean? It's in a sport like running, I think it's just so obviously there's not a lot of money in it, which is why brands like to have someone who can essentially market them. That's what they're looking for. So yeah, not saying you have to go out and start a YouTube channel, but there's definitely a few pretty easy ways to just do a little bit better. But I guess it's just not for everyone. And if at the end of the day they're running well, like yeah, good on them. And I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who are making or doing pretty well without having, too much to market about themselves. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But I think you even, starting a YouTube channel, it's probably, I mean, I can't speak for you, but it probably has made you a lot more comfortable in front of camera, a lot more comfortable in interviews, a lot more comfortable, talking to people, being out your comfort zone and almost like selling yourself in a way. And it's like just little skills like that, I think would go a long way. And yeah, that's a good point about Strava, building up, based on that brands, there's 10,000 people who are checking up on what you're doing every day. So, but
Yeah.
I think it's a good skill to have, and it might not be that you gain a following, but you learn how to connect with people, through a camera as well. And the world we live in, a lot of what we see and hear is all through a camera, So
Yeah.
one of the days where live, going actual to live sport is as big anymore.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think it definitely has helped with all that kind of thing. So, yeah, not that I was in it for, getting
Exactly, yeah.
better on camera, but it's one of those things that kind of comes with it. So, it all helps for sure. Yeah.
100%, man. Look, just for before we finish up, let's just talk about the Baltimore group, Corey Leslie, and who's actually in this group? Because it's, like you said, it's a new group for me. Is it a group we should be keeping an eye on? Is there many internationals in there? Are you the only one? Yeah, just dive a little bit deeper there.
Yeah, so right now I'm the only international on the men's side. On the women's side, there's two, and they're the only two ladies who are actually officially signed right now, I think. So Ellie Leather, who's from England, and then Susan Ejor. She just got married, so her name might be changing, but she's from Kenya. And then yeah, on the men's side, it's still a new team and it's still growing, but for sure, it's going to be hopefully one to watch for the future. I think there's definitely a lot of good potential. But yeah, so me, Willie Fink, who's run 13:16 for the 5K and 3:37 1500, John Renewicki, 28:15 10K, and Casey Comer, who's a 3:54 miler. So I think there are plans to sign a few more people. I'm not sure when or who. For sure, but yeah, it's kind of on the rise. Small group now, but based at Under Armour World HQ. And I think a lot of pretty good potential for the next few years. So yeah, really happy to be a part of it. Corey's been great so far. I mean, I've only been in Baltimore for a week and a half, but everything's been going well. Got a mile next week. Me and John are heading a couple of hours drive to a place called Monmouth in New Jersey, and it's a pretty strong field for that, so hopefully that can kind of cap off the season pretty nicely. And then from there it'll be a few days kind of down, and then the team's going to I think altitude training camp in Arizona for most of November is the plan. So small group now, but kind of growing, and I think yeah, definitely for the future it's gonna be hopefully one to watch. So it should be good.
Sounds like there's a little more. Will it be a little bit more track focused? Sounds like it might be a little bit more track orientated there, which is cool.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we're talking about potentially racing one cross country race that's like the American kind of national like club championships. It's kind of on the radar. We're not sure if it'll happen or not yet, but it's kind of nice. Like if I was back in college right now, it would be running a lot of mileage and getting ready for the cross country season. And after the next couple of weeks, when we're building back up, it will be pretty high mileage, but it's just kind of nice to not have to worry about the collegiate cross country season and just kind of train through. So yeah, definitely track focus. We'll do indoors, and then outdoors hopefully we'll be hitting our straps and getting ready for running quick, and who knows, maybe making a team at some point, but we'll see. Yeah,
Have you ever run across in the UK? Or have you managed to avoid it?
funnily enough, I have actually run two, but they were just like, we were on holiday from Australia and it was like my cousin's school cross country. There were two little meets when I was 17, and I think they were all like 14, 15-year-olds. I've won them both, and yeah, pretty happy with that.
Let you in.
Big achievements. Yeah, but I've never done a UK cross country that I've seen pictures of, as in
Like a proper
I've
one.
never done one that is like proper UK cross.
Yeah.
I'll
Hell.
avoid it as long as I can.
Nah, I was gonna say you'll have to come back and do Liverpool instead of the US cross champs.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
I'll pass. Although that as well, if there's like a European champs, it would be cool to at some point make a relay or something. If I could get
Well,
away
that's the thing, yeah, with the relay now, like it opens it up. Like
with
someone like yourself who's good 1500 runner, but look, NCA cross is no joke. So yeah, there's spots definitely.
the courses might be a bit of a joke, but some are pretty tough. But I don't know, I can't really talk until I do run an English one. So we'll see. Maybe that day will come at some point.
Hey, and just selfishly, where'd you end up at altitude in Italy then? Because it's a place, obviously, not many, well, I don't know, many Brits who have been out to Italy altitude training. So just
Yeah.
share that
No,
area.
it's a hidden gem, honestly. Like we were about 45, 50 minutes from St. Moritz. in Livigno, so Livigno, Livigno, Italy, and it was such a good spot. There's a track, a little town, not much else, but I guess you don't really expect too much in those little kind of towns at altitude, but just such a great spot and quite a bit cheaper than St. Moritz. So we got an Airbnb. The four of us just stayed there for a couple of weeks, and it was so good. Yeah, really great spot. I think over the next few years it'll probably become a bit more popular in the running world because
You've
it kind
exposed it. You've exposed
of
poor town.
yeah, exactly. It's gonna get infiltrated now with runners over the next few years. But no, really good spot. So hopefully we'll be back in future. Yeah.
Certainly looked it, and I think we'd seen it before on like maybe Crippa's social media or stuff. Because isn't it? Don't the Italian team use it quite a lot as well?
Yeah, I think so. And I think like, yeah, there were a few training camps going on. There were a few like Norwegians there, a few people from like the Czech Republic and stuff. So it is kind of it's being discovered, but it's definitely not quite at the level of St. Moritz. Funnily enough, on our drive back down from Italy, we were driving to Germany and we stopped in St. Moritz on our way because it was only about 20 minutes out the way. Had a little run and a swim, but yeah, just such a good spot and quite a bit cheaper than going to Samaras. So yeah, I think it'll be a popular one for the future.
Yeah, for sure. Well, look, thanks very much for coming on the pod, mate. Best of luck next week for your mile, and
Thank you.
rest
Yeah.
for your Under Armour career as well.
Thank you very much, boys. It's been good fun. Thanks for having me on.